Paris Live Radio. Good morning, Paris. This is Max Kaiser. I'm here with Stacey Herbert. This is Le Frick Show. We're bringing you the best in talk, politics, economics, and all that jive. How you feeling this morning? Are you feeling a little warm? Are you feeling a little toasty? It's not the duvet, I can assure you. It's global warming. Global warming is actually no longer a theory. Climate change and global warming are a fact. Industry-led, corporate-sponsored, politically overlooked global warming, climate change, is frying us. The solutions are actually not out of reach. There is one solution. It's a possible solution. It's worked before in America with the sulfur market. If you remember, there was acid rain in America, and they came up with sulfur trading, which limited the amount of sulfur that companies can emit to a system of cap and trade, so-called sulfur trading, which actually reduced acid rain quite dramatically. Now, the Europeans picked up on this model, and they introduced carbon trading. And now that they, as of January, there's a formal carbon trading market, several, in fact. And through carbon trading, the trading of carbon emissions contracts, it's a way to curb corporations to emit less carbon, plus incentivize corporations to emit less carbon because they can sell any units of carbon credits that they have left over from emitting less carbon to some other company that's a carbon hog, like Exxon. And they can use that profit to develop new things, new technologies, new carbon less intrusive technologies. Stacey Herbert.
Hi there. This is a nice way to start a Monday morning off.
Yeah, carbon.
But it's training. Always the best time to hear the bad news. Get it out right away. And we should just proceed from there.
You know, the G8 conference that's going on is you've got business leaders all over the world trying to get America and the UK to get serious about carbon emissions trading limits. They want limits. They want leadership. They want guidance. These big corporations, they want to emit less carbon. They see the framework in which they can emit less carbon, but they're not getting the necessary leadership from Washington, from the UK, from Tony Blair, from George Bush to tell them exactly what the limits are, because unfortunately Bush and Blair are financial illiterates. They know how to get votes. They know how to throw elections. They know how to do influence peddling. They know how to appease the corporocracy. They know how to take bribes. But they don't know how to lead. They don't know anything about economics. They don't know that you need limits in any economy to make it work. They think free market markets are, you know, like water that if you introduce a bucket to move water from one place to another place, they call that socialism.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like they don't get the fact that all markets need some regulations for those markets to work. That's why there's such a thing as a Federal Reserve Bank and the discount rate and interest rates. They need a fixed rate around which business can work, can evolve. Now, the same concept should go and is applied to carbon emissions. There's a fixed amount of carbon emissions one can emit, and this number needs to be fixed. But, you know, these guys, these so-called leaders, are dropping the ball because they're thinking post-administration. You know, Blair wants to go on the lecture circuit. He wants to be a CEO in America. He wants to be on the board of American companies. Bush is looking, you know, the presidency for him is a way to burnish his resume. It'll look good on his resume. He's not a leader in a sense of a, you know, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, you know, even FDR. He's just a yuppie who's looking to burnish his resume, and he's pulled a few strings, and the presidency looks great on a resume. But mm-hmm. He has no idea what he's doing. He is, in fact, you know, he's consigning the globe. You know, I found it quite amusing that there's this huge concern out there with calling Guantanamo Bay a gulag.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They don't like the phrase gulag.
No, they don't.
Because it reminds them of Stalin and reminds them of the worst oppressors of communism as it's referred to by America. Although mm-hmm. It's not communism, it's really the dictatorship that Stalin was in charge of.
Yes.
It's not. You know, communism died shortly after the Russian Revolution.
About 24 hours after.
Yeah, then you had a dictatorship.
Yeah.
Which, so you've got this this distress in America because, you know, is Guantanamo Bay a gulag? Well, here's a concept for you because I'll do you one better. Let me raise the stakes here for a second. Because of Bush and Blair, the entire globe has become an Auschwitz-type oven. We're living in a globally warming oven, which is a fascist product. It's way beyond gulag status. We all live in this oven due to global warming.
So you're saying it's worse than a gulag.
Much
it's actually
worse.
Auschwitz.
It's species extinction. Even the Financial Times, which is, you know, a publication which is dedicated to the furtherment of so-called capitalist ideals, front lead editorial yesterday said that global warming is a reality. The species is under threat. And the leaders are, what are they doing? They're taking bribes, essentially. That's what it boils down to, bribe-taking.
Who are they taking a bribe from? Because you're saying that the leaders of these corporations want some answers about what to do. Who are they taking? I mean, are these corporations saying that for PR effect? Or
Exxon.
Yeah.
BP. Uh-huh. Chevron. Okay, now Chevron and Unocal, two U.S. California-based oil companies.
Yeah.
They're colluding to stave off a hostile raid from a Chinese company for Unocal. China wants to buy Unocal.
Yeah.
You know, China's got a huge amount of dollars sloshing around in their economy because of the fixed rate that they've got. The yuan with the dollar, the 8.2-to-1 ratio, or whatever the fixed rate is. As a result, they've been building up hundreds of millions of dollars worth of hundred billions of dollars worth of
dollars
in the banks, and they need a way to get rid of those dollars,
mm-hmm.
especially since there's a risk that the dollar may implode, according to Stephen Roach over there at J.P. Morgan. So they need a way to diversify out of these dollars, and so why not buy a U.S. oil company like Unocal? So Unocal and Chevron, two companies that are bitter enemies, and they have avoided trying to one buy the other, are now colluding to be actually merged to create a new entity, which would keep the Chinese at bay. So again, where's the free market in this? You've got collusion in America between these two oil companies. You've got protectionism. Of course, China is just a capitalist predator that should be lauded as such in America. If America was truly committed to these so-called capitalist ideals,
no,
you know, but they're not because it's duplicity, it's hypocrisy. I love the editorial actually in yesterday's Financial Times talking about the fact that markets and finance have become basically interchangeable with entertainment.
They are quite amusing, aren't they?
Because, and you think about it, and I've been saying this for years and years, because there's no underlying collateral value for any of the derivatives and bonds that swap between various banks. You know, ultimately, if you work out, for example, the pool of mortgages that are used in the mortgage derivative swapping business, the houses that they use have been sold so many times over again to fund these phantom derivative contracts. There is no real collateral value. So what you're left with is pure entertainment. It's just entertainment for bankers. It's banking entertainment,
mm-hmm.
is what the world finance and world community has come to. And you say this, and first of all, the NGO community, the nonprofit community, the Greenpeace's of the world, the Friends of the Earth, these types of groups, they don't believe you. They refuse to believe you. They think you're not taking the problem seriously enough. They don't understand that they're being toyed with like as pieces of a huge global monopoly game. They don't want to accept that they're trivial to beyond to
well, they're
end.
Part of the entertainment, and
yeah,
Bob
exactly.
Geldof seems to have accepted this, and same with Bono.
These are two entertainment giants that are now bankers.
Yeah.
So they've successfully merged the two.
They're like the court jesters, and they understand. They don't care as long as they show me the money. Le Fric.
The Frick Show is what this show's all about here, the Paris Live Radio. My name is Max Kaiser. I'm here with Stacey Herbert. We're here every morning at this time bringing you Le Frick Show, which is a double entendre. It actually means money in French. It's a Frick slang for money.
Does that mean it's a double entendre?
No, absolutely not.
The wrong word.
I've been misusing that word. It just sounds French, though, doesn't it?
Le Frick.
Double entendre.
Oui, it is.
I've been
French.
Misusing that word. Horribly. Horribly. Speaking of oil and gas and the energy markets and the global warming and climate change, we started the show here today asking you, the listener of Paris Live Radio, if you feel hotter.
Uh-huh.
You should feel hotter because the global temperatures are rising and corporations, it's their game. Your piece is on their game. Your deaths are really been amortized already, like the insurance industry through the actuarial tables have already figured out what your dead body is worth to them, and they've written insurance against it. They don't care! They don't care.
They don't care.
But Mother Nature, however, is the cosmic accountant. She comes in and she squares the books, as she's doing right now.
Rock on, baby.
And what we're getting ready for, and I know you're a big follower of this.
Of Mother Nature. I love her.
Hurricane season.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about hurricane season. Stacey Herbert. Let's hear Hurricane Season by Stacey Herbert.
That's what it sounds like. Have you ever been in a hurricane? I have.
No.
You
are you
going to
give us the information or just going to be a karaoke break or something? I thought this would be a great lead-in for you to actually talk about. I mean, I can talk about hurricanes.
No.
Thing about
okay.
Hurricanes?
So, you know, hurricane season...
Financial Times.
Hurricane season runs from June 1st to November 30th,
right?
And we've already had the first one. It's starting up in, I forget what her name is, but she's down there in right off Cuba at the moment.
Yeah.
And it's, what, June 9th, June 10th, somewhere around there. So first week of the year, it's already starting off, and the last one, remember last year when we had those four devastating hurricanes hit Florida, almost wiped it away, and maybe this year it might happen, because last year the first hurricane wasn't until August 1st. So it's already starting 2 months earlier, so we might have a much more exciting, speaking about entertainment.
How many billions of damage did hurricanes cause last year?
You probably have the answer. I bet you it's
no,
about,
I don't. I don't remember. I know you. You're the hurricane expert. You look at Drudge Report. They have the hurricane map, and you say, "Look, here the hurricanes are coming. They're going to wipe Florida out, the state that threw the election. Yay! It's retribution. It's Mother Nature coming to attack those Floridians."
Well, Florida is about the worst state in the whole United States. I have no idea why tourists even go there. Anyway. I think it cost something like $40 billion last year.
That sounds roughly roughly. Yeah.
Yes, it was about $10 billion at each go. So hopefully we'll have about 7, 8, 9, maybe 10 this year.
Yeah, I mean, the insurance industry likes it because they can raise premiums.
Yeah.
So they get a higher, you know, bang for the buck. But there is a point at which you have diminishing returns.
But, of course, they also said last year those four hurricanes boosted GDP in America because of all the reconstruction.
Yeah. Just like the tsunami in the Indian Ocean.
Just like Iraq.
December 26th, the neoliberal think tank, the Adam Smith Institute. Who's that weasel at the Adam Smith Institute? That pencil-necked shrimp dick. What's that guy's name? He looks like something from a 1950s science fiction, scary Japanese Godzilla movie. What was that guy's name?
I have no idea who you're talking about.
The guy with the, we talked about him last night.
Myron Abel?
Yeah.
He's not from the Adam Smith Institute, is he?
I believe he might be. I think I've seen him.
He's the one that's always saying climate change is a joke.
Yeah, we can't really believe the science. You can't apply the cautionary principle to climate change, even though people are burning to death. They're on fire. Yeah, but we can't apply the cautionary principle, but we should apply the cautionary principle to weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, even though we've got oodles and oodles of evidence suggesting that there are no weapons. The weapons inspectors say there are no weapons. There's been sanctions for 12 years. There's nothing, you know, more than a pea shooter down there. And but, of course, you, as Condoleezza Rice said, you don't want to let a mushroom cloud be your indicator of whether or not you've got a good foreign policy or not. You know, Condoleezza, I would suggest that you don't want your ass to be on fire from climate change to let you know. You know, the little short and curly butt hairs on fire on your well-sculpted behind to let you know that, in fact, there is such a thing as global warming and climate change. You know what I'm saying, Condi baby? I know, you know, you like to keep the empirical evidence rough and hard. She likes it rough.
Wow, that was one of the most profound things you will ever hear on breakfast radio in Paris.
Yeah, she's a sexy, you know, fox, but
I see.
In a lot of ways.
I see this image of her short and curly is on fire has turned you on.
Kind of.
Anyway, yes, hurricane season is already upon us. It looks like it's going to be very entertaining this year. Speaking of entertainment.
Yeah, you can watch the hurricanes blast Florida. You know, if you own insurance stocks, you're going to do well because they're going to raise the premiums. If you own the U.S. dollar, it's probably going to be good because they'll say it's a GDP booster.
Mm-hmm.
And so as long as you're at a safe distance, you can watch Floridians get blown away in hurricanes and have a lot of fun doing so.
This will be better than shock and awe.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be Mother Nature's shock and awe. She's coming back. You know, it's a big – that's the thing about shock and awe. It was so pathetic. It was such – It's like, who could have the... It was a weenie-waving contest between 9/11 and shock and awe. Because mm-hmm. Americans... The thing about America hated about 9/11 was that they think they're the big dog. They think they can wreak the most havoc and blow up the most people and throw napalm and burn people and destroy economies. And they think that they're the big badasses in the globe. So 9/11 kind of, you know, destroyed that theory that somebody else could come up and really look, make them look small in terms of their sadistic nature. Mm-hmm. So they came back with shock and awe. Like, this was their answer to 9/11. Like, oh, yeah, you think you're bad? Check it out. It's like the Dallas Cowboys running the U.S. foreign policy. You know, it's like, let's send Bart Starr out there and really throw the bomb, you know.
Yeah, but...
The
like,
precision bomb!
But like you said at the top of the show, that it's all about entertainment. Because, of course, America came out with a video game, shock and awe.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's entertainment. It's finance, it's entertainment. Politics is entertainment. They have TV cameras in the Senate chamber. It's all entertainment. Because entertainment, think about entertainment that makes entertainment entertainment. It's all based on the emergence of leisure time. You know, up until a few thousand years ago, the concept of, there was no concept of leisure time except for, like, the medieval lords. But you got to go back before that when the struggling, you know, 10,000, 15,000 years ago when you had the hunter-gatherer, there was not really this leisure time concept because you were constantly under the gun to find food.
And
you know,
running away from the woolly mammoth or the saber-toothed tiger.
Exactly. So then, you know, the human species started... To remain stationary with the development of agriculture and domesticating animals. And then pretty soon they invented the weekend, which is something that, you know, all the big bad capitalists love to spend their weekends sailing their yachts. Well, if it wasn't for the labor movements that developed during the Industrial Revolution to combat predatory monopolists, there would be no such thing as the weekend. You know, they don't pay homage to that. The big fat cats who are raping and pillaging and stealing and sucking the marrow out of the global economy so they can make their yacht payments. They don't thank the labor movement for inventing the weekend. You know, they don't know where they come from. This is what I'm saying.
The weekend.
Speaking of Lou Frick Show, this is this show. My name is Max Kaiser. I'm here with Stacey Herbert. We also do a show on Saturdays broadcast in London on Resonance 104.4. It's called The Truth About Markets, and you can get that on the internet. You look under The Truth About Markets, you put that into your favorite search engine, and you can find one of our shows, download that show. That show is actually raunchier than this show.
It's raunchier, and it's a little bit more amusing because we get to ridicule Tony Blair.
Yeah, this show, because, you know, it's a commercial radio station, we have to be somewhat commercial-minded.
We have to be polite.
But Resonance is a free-for-all. You know, it's
genuine anarchy.
We let it rip on that show.
It's a genuine free market. There are no barriers.
Oh, so you can find that.
Speaking
show
of
no
barriers, what do you think?
We should do some ads. I don't know. Let's do some ads. Somebody, we got to give somebody a raise and play. Who can we give an ad to?
How about let's promote one of the best places to drink in Paris.
Where's that?
Chabin.
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 Chabin. Where's that?
It's a nice, it's a groovy little bar with the cutest owners,
yeah.
I have to say.
Really?
And they are in the fifth, just off Rue Mouffetard.
Right.
On something Poule au
Fer. Pot-au-feu.
Pot-au-feu.
Pot-au-feu, which is a lovely French delicacy, a dish.
Oh, is it?
A pot-au-feu. You know what a pot-au-feu is. It's a classic French cuisine. It's
anyway.
Rue pot-au-feu off Rue Mouffetard. There's Chabin.
Anyway, you know.
We were there
all,
last night. And Joey John, by the way. The man, you know, he's out of control. He's showing everyone his butt crack. Maybe that's what got me thinking about butt cracks and Condoleezza Rice's Short and Curly's. Because Joey John was out there flashing his butt. And we developed a new public service announcement for all listeners of Paris Live Radio. Just say no to Joey's butt crack.
Yeah.
Just say no to Joey's crack.
Joey's crack. You know, I developed nausea, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
It's a pretty hideous butt crack, I have to say.
Well,
I wouldn't want to see that one on fire.
Plus, he was walking around asking people to smell his finger. I'm not sure what that was all about.
He smelled it.
He stuck it in my nose, practically. It's like, smell my finger. I'm like, what is this, Beavis and Butthead or something? I don't know what it was all about. I was having an acid flashback back to Beavis and Butthead. I mean, I like Beavis and Butthead. I think they're geniuses, and I miss them sorely.
Speaking of Beavis and Butthead, there's this guy Gregory...
Oh, Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld?
No.
And Condoleezza Rice and George Bush?
Here's this man. His name is Gregory Dupre.
Yeah.
And he crossed the border from Canada into America. And, of course, you know you have to go through this whole lockdown, check down, they anal probe you, everything. You know, you know this whole war on terror
like the
thing.
You anal probe, don't you?
I do. But especially the ones at the Schiphol Airport in Amsterdam. Fantastic. The the lesbians are fantastic. But
yeah,
anyway,
they have a better quality of electrical probe, don't they?
Yes, they do. And so this guy, Gregory Dupre, now you have to look him up, D-E-S-P-R-E-S, because you have to see a photo to believe it. But the man, he decapitated a 74-year-old musician in Canada and left his head in a pillowcase on the kitchen table. And he also killed this guy's wife. Anyway, he did this with a chainsaw, and he crossed the U.S. border, the border into America, with his chainsaw bloodied, and the Americans interrogated him for 2 hours and kept the chainsaw and let him go through.
Yeah, well, the chainsaw was made by Halliburton.
Yeah.
So he must have been a good guy then.
They claim that certainly...
Well, it was Iraqi blood, so they did a DNA test and it determined it was Iraqi blood, so that's okay.
The Americans...
Halliburton Chainsaw with Iraqi blood? Let him in. He's cool. He's fine. He's no danger to anybody.
The customs official said, certainly there was a lot of behavior that raised concerns by our inspectors. He did demonstrate bizarre behavior, but that's not illegal.
So, no, just watch Dick Cheney in a press conference.
Being bizarre is not a reason to keep somebody out of this country or lock them up.
Well, the funny thing is also the guy looks like one of the characters from that TV show Laverne and Shirley. Remember their
Oh, yeah, Squiggy.
Squiggy.
He looks like Squiggy, but like...
Squiggy. After electroshock therapy.
Yeah, Squiggy meets Charles Manson, I have to say. You have to see his eyes. But anyway, they let him in, and they claimed that they couldn't tell if the blood on the chainsaw was actually paint, because they didn't have a CSI investigator.
They can read from a satellite 600 miles up in outer space. They flash it on your, in your earlobe, but they can't decide if they think that you're plotting against the Washington consensus. But here's a guy splattered with red red substance. with a chainsaw, but we're not sure what it might be. It could be paint. It could be cherry filling from an ice cream cone. It could be droppings from a sick condor.
Yeah, conveniently
hell?
On a chainsaw. You know, as if you would really mistake it.
Yeah, well,
as something other than
that's
what it
America
is.
For you. The it's a dying kind of country. Anyway, so speaking of countries that are actually interesting, Bolivia. You know, the Bolivians are getting more and more serious here. They're getting ready for civil war because, again, oil and gas, global warming, climate change. Who wants global warming and climate change? The
mm-hmm.
oil and gas companies.
Mm-hmm.
Who's privatizing the natural assets of various countries like Bolivia for their own greedy good? It's
mm-hmm.
the oil and gas companies. Now, finally, in Latin America with Chavez down there in Venezuela. And, of course, we've got here in Bolivia, we've got the rebellion of the peasants, so-called peasants, but we would call them the democratically minded hopeful.
And Bush would call them peasant terrorists.
Yeah, Bush calls the peasant terrorists are actually the only expression of democracy that we have in the world. I mean, the British called the Americans terrorists back in 1776.
They did, and the French rescued their butts.
And the French rescued America. You know, the Americans don't really remember the whole thing, that without the French, they would have lost the Revolutionary War, because the French financed the Revolutionary War, they assisted the Americans in the Revolutionary War, and they provided the intellectual firepower for everything that became the Constitution and the Bill of Rights from the French. So,
yeah, of course they did.
The Americans have very short memories. Just because France decided that the war in Iraq was illegal and that killing Muslims for sport was probably not a good idea, and inflaming and starting another crusade
mm-hmm.
was probably not an appropriate behavior in the 21st century, just because they came out and said that publicly, America's stopped eating French's mustard, even though it's made in Pittsburgh.
But I have to say, okay, the story about Bolivia, I think this is the future of what's going to happen in Europe, because, you know, the French said no to the neoliberal model.
Oh, yeah.
And, they're being, humiliated and ridiculed, whatever, in the press. But, you know, the Bolivians said the same thing, politely, several years ago.
Yeah.
The Bechtel, all the corporate firms refused to believe them, refused to accept their no. And now it's come to this, where they're ousting presidents after president after president. And, they're not going to give up until they get their gas back.
It's a global insurrection.
As a global...
Against American imperialism, American and UK imperialism, Israeli, of course, you got to throw Israel in there. And the people of the world are rebelling against this horrible bastardization of democracy in the name of private corporate profiteering. And now in France, you've got Dominic de Villepin, the new prime minister. And he came out with some statements. And he came out with two primary statements by Dominic de Villepin.
Tell them, because he's a wordsmith, isn't he?
Well, first of all, he reemphasized the idea of a top-down bureaucratic approach to government, that the government can make good social policy for the benefit of the people.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing he said was that to address the unemployment issue here in France, that there needs to be more flexibility for small companies and starting companies mm-hmm. on the hiring front.
Yeah.
Now, I think that actually both of those points are correct.
Yeah.
Let's take the first point. There's a top-down approach. How much time do we have, by the way?
We have exactly 2 minutes.
Okay, I should be able to squeeze this in. The top-down approach is it's okay because having statesmen who are philosophically and ideologically well-grounded coming up with social policy is okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because the result is clear. The culture in France is clear. There's a culture in France. It's obvious. You can see it. And that's the product of social...
You can taste it, you can smell it, you can breathe it.
Engineering.
Yeah.
By bureaucrats uh-huh. and civil servants and leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no culture in America. And yeah. you can feel that, too, as the bullet enters your spine. And you're driving down, the highway.
It's called road rage.
You should say, wow.
That's the extent of American culture.
If
road
only
rage.
We had a culture. I wouldn't be dead right now. This is what most Americans think. Now, as far as the this is where the socialists, unfortunately, don't back this idea of more flexible rates, more flexible terms for new hires and small businesses and new corporations.
Yeah.
This is where the socialists are completely dropping the ball. Socialists who oppose the Villepin plan don't really understand a key point, which is that if you join a new company and you might get fired after 2 years, if there are a lot of new companies being created, you can job hop.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
a lot of frisson. There's a lot of excitement. There's a culture there. It's a business culture that can be developed to go alongside your social culture. And if you have a young person, they're just out of school, and they join a new company, and they get 2 years' experience, and they jump into another new company, this doesn't put a stigma. See, the problem is there's a stigmatization against having been fired from a job, and people in Europe carry this around as a black mark for their careers, and they're deathly afraid of this. But this is completely wrong, in my opinion.
In America, it's a badge of honor.
Yeah.
Get fired from McDonald's
yeah.
and Burger King.
In this sense that there is, you see, I'm not saying you wouldn't want to go totally to the
American way.
To the American way.
No.
But there is room mm-hmm. within the French system to inculcate or to generate a new, vibrant jobs model. And all you need to do is, this guy, Villepin, is a very good speaker, and he needs to communicate this idea of a job network. Growing up spontaneously. If he opened up 20 little mini Silicon Valley type places around France.
Yeah.
I mean, there's one already down in the south near Nice.
Yeah,
they had
yeah.
a little Silicon Alley Valley type situation
yeah, yeah,
down
yeah.
there.
I forget the name of it, but yeah.
Yeah. But,
We're going to have to tune in tomorrow to hear the rest of the story.
Yeah, I guess so.
Where we are, Max is so upset.
I'm going back to Chapin, man. I need another cocktail.
We are Le Freak Show. We're here every morning, whether you like it or not.
Bye, y'all!
See ya!